This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Are we now in an era of design? You see this clearly when you look at the success of, let's say, Apple. Strong design, very much their brand maker. It's shifted the landscape of technology and commerce, which brings us to North Carolina. It's very likely that you have seen Molly Renda's art. You just don't know it. Molly is a graphic designer, so her art isn't in a frame with her name on it, but her work has appeared all over the Triangle. At the Nasher, the Center for Documentary Studies, Algonquin Books, and NC State. Molly Renda is a book designer and exhibit program designer at North Carolina State University Libraries and on our program now. Welcome. Good to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Frank.
So as we talk about this question of art and design and kind of how, particularly now, and we're becoming a much more visual culture, I'd like you to take us back to your grandfather, an applied artist, and tell us about his work in your hometown.
Well, he was probably a very formative influence on me. And I grew up in a small town in Connecticut, Newtown. And there was a time when every sign in the town was painted by my grandfather because he was the only show in town. He had mechanical and commercial art training. He'd worked as a mechanical illustrator. And when I grew up with him, he had started his own sign shop in Newtown, where he built a home in the 30s during the Depression.
And people gravitated to it. Because tell me about the Edmond Town Hall sign that was originally painted by your grandfather.
Well, I moved away in the 70s to go to school and would come back from time to time to visit friends. And that sign stayed for years and years and years. And he was a little bit eccentric. He wasn't necessarily perfectly skilled in everything that he tried to accomplish. Sometimes he'd even saw off the top of a bedpost. This, admittedly, it only happened once, but once was enough to create a finial for one of the signs he was working on. And in the 90s, I thought it really very touching and almost comical that the town had decided to recreate this sign exactly with all its flaws because it was, you know, in dire need of replacement, but partly because of the sort of historic nature of the town and wanting to keep this small town ambience and authenticity. They recreated every slightly imperfect letter that appeared on the sign that Ed Cullen
which raises
created.
The whole question of perfection, the idea that if this is the icon, if this is what represents our town hall, then it's perfect. This is the thing we've come to see. And that, you know, by its nature, that at this human hand is now perfect in a way. In a way?
Well, it took me many years to realize that perfectionism is only good if you're flexible about it.
Flexible perfectionism. I like that. I'm going to use that all. So how did you come to graphic design?
Well, it was a bit of a circuitous route. I think because of the influence of my grandfather and my mother, who was a custom dressmaker, and my two other grandfathers, but particularly someone who wasn't a grandfather by blood, Chris Sedanius, who was an engineer and artist in Newtown, I was one of those people who always knew that I wanted to pursue a life in art. I went to the School of Visual Arts and majored in fine arts, painting, printmaking, object making. But like all good artists who graduate with a BFA, I made my way slowly but surely, supporting myself, working in restaurants and working on a variety of projects on the side, including theater and printmaking, teaching, both editioning and teaching. But I started picking up graphic design work, and one example was a colleague from my class who migrated from painting to painting on silk, and he started a business in the fashion industry. So I realized that, I'd always had a very strong affinity for text and graphics, being a printmaker, studying with people like Bob Blackburn at the Printmaking Workshop. Learning about the Dadaists and Surrealists, a time when art and language and publishing and making works of literature and art were very intertwined. And I produced a lot of duds in those early years, having not been mm-hmm. formally trained as a graphic designer, but realized that more and more I became drawn to the practice of book design, which is sort of one of the less understood avenues of design.
Well, help us understand that, what goes into book design. We read the book and we look at it and it's all of a piece to us, but it doesn't come together that way, does it?
Well, no, it doesn't. And often people are perplexed when you introduce yourself as a book designer because sometimes, especially if it's a work of fiction or nonfiction, it's not apparent what a book designer does. In fact, that's often the question. What do you do exactly? Do you make the illustrations? Do you design the cover? Do you pick the photographs? But what a book designer does is they take all of these raw elements, and of course a book has had a life that stretches back to the original conception of the artist, the writer, or in the case of a museum catalog, the curator who was putting together a show. And when the book designer enters the scene, there's still a long way to go before it's a finished book. So you receive a manuscript, even if today it's a manuscript that's digital in the form of a Word document. And my friend and colleague Rich Hendel just published a wonderful book about contemporary book design that your listeners might be interested in following up on for even better examples than I'll give here. And the process takes, things are going faster and faster and faster. Mm-hmm. So there's printing up, publishing on demand is a whole other conversation. There's an analysis of what that manuscript is, what the requirements are, what's the appropriate typeface for a given work, what is the budget, because book designers often really do, traditional book designers provide a complete service. It's not just book design, then it goes to production manager, then it goes to someone else. And we really see it through from those words on paper or words on my screen to a printed bound object.
So does that include both the cover design and it's more than both, but also the quality of the paper, as you said, the font, you know, where you're going to put the numbers on the paper and all of that, and as well as the physical size of the book. I mean, all of
those
that?
Decisions go into making a book. And they're trade publishing has it all very compartmentalized. There are people who specialize specifically in cover design because those covers are meant, you know, they're very driven by marketing. And academic publishing, of which we have some wonderful presses here, as you know, Duke Press, UNC Press, and wonderful designers in those organizations who really do see the complete the complete object, the complete story. So
I would think that book design is more important today in the digital age than it ever was, because it would seem to me the only way you're going to distinguish this artifact from the online version is by the design of that book from cover to finish.
I think that I think there's room for both in our modern culture, and I think that readers, especially, you know, people who are as apt to appreciate the advantages of a Kindle for their portability and other, you know, ways in which you couldn't really interact with printed books prior to that, still want those moments where they're sitting with the object in their hands and the feel of the paper and the reflected light that brings that language into their consciousness through typography.
Yeah, and I wasn't suggesting that one is better than the other, but I was saying that if you are going to go to the trouble of printing a book, mm-hmm. then design matters more than ever, because one of the things that's going to maybe sell the book, or the reason you're going to pay a little bit extra for it and cart around a heavier book, is because that artifact is so gorgeous, there's nothing that can be reproduced. It cannot be reproduced.
Well, I think that the marketplace shows that, but I think that, you know, having started designing books in the early 80s, and of course there's a long tradition prior to that that speaks for itself, there have been a lot of really innovative and artful designs of both trade and academic books.
You started with your early work was with Algonquin when they were in their early stages of development too. Tell us about working there and what was going on at Algonquin.
Well, I should say that moving here in 1984, I had designed one book prior to that, and I was able to meet designers here like Rich Hendel and Mary Mendel at Duke Press and Joyce Kachurgis, who had her own shop in Bynum and gave me a job as a production assistant. She was doing the Algonquin List at that time, and I really learned. I mean, book design is a particular kind of craft with its own language and procedures, and I really was able to learn, especially book production, from the, you know, cast off of the manuscript to specking type to understanding the, you know, the best way to transmit materials to the typesetter and then to the printer. It also gave me incredible opportunity that I might not have gotten so easily in a city like New York. And through Joyce and then later through Shannon Ravenel and Louis Rubin, I designed a lot of Algonquin's fiction and then some of their nonfiction. I worked on the early Larry Brown books and Kay Gibbons. And, you know, those were their authors that they, you know, those were the top of their list. And for a fairly young designer, or I should say new designer, to be given that opportunity, it was really lucky for me.
Algonquin itself was just getting going at the time. It must have been interesting to see them as they're getting their feet under them, right? Talk about those early days for them.
It's a pretty fascinating story about Algonquin, which started in 82 by Louis Rubin and Shannon Ravenel. And, you know, you're not going to make your life's fortune publishing literary fiction by unknown authors. And there were some really hard financial times. And I saw Algonquin through their acquisition by a company called Taylor Publishing, First Taylor Publishing in Texas, and later Workman Publishing in New York. And if anybody knows how to make a success out of literary fiction, it was Peter Workman, who had the vision and the commitment to make Algonquin the really viable publishing concern that it is today. And you know, it was like, duh, you know, yes, publish some calendars that are spin-offs of your nonfiction list. Publish some gift books, and that gives you the freedom to really do your core passion, which is to publish really good fiction.
And then what's getting back to the role of the book designer? You know, we had Branford Marsalis on the show a couple of weeks ago, and we talked to him about playing different roles on a record depending on the piece, and we talked about the solo. And he said, well, you know, when it comes to a solo, you're not going to save that piece and you're not going to wreck that piece. It's all up to the singer or, you know, whoever the main performers are, and then you're going to add an embellishment. Is that your role, or do you feel yourself integral to what part of Larry Brown's success? Clearly great writers, Kay Gibbons, you talked about. These are good books. What's your sense of responsibility to them as a designer and the role you're going to play in the ultimate success of that book?
That's a really good question, because there was a time when I realized during this, you know, it used to take a good 9 months to get from manuscript to bound books. And especially with fiction, where ultimately it is the author's book, you are presenting, your job is to do the best you can to present the work of this person. And book design classically is the invisible design. The designer recedes from the page. But there's a moment in that process when I really felt like the book was mine, whether it was when it was in page proof or if I was going through a second or third iteration of a cover design or making specific decisions about how I was going to set the type. But I knew full well that was a moment in the life cycle of the book, and when it was ink on paper, then it was the author's.
Tell us about your work now at North Carolina State's libraries.
Well, I've done a variety of design work, and which includes some exhibition design or exhibit design specifically for libraries. I've worked with I worked with an artist, Xu Bing, when he did a residency at Duke several years ago, and have done some special exhibits for Perkins Library. And I was looking for something new to do and saw the posting for the job for exhibit designer at the NCSU libraries, and decided that I would apply for it, even though it might be a long shot. And it should be said that NCSU Libraries is nothing if not willing to sort of see outside the confines of what is expected. And I think Susan Nutter has done a lot to really place the libraries as one of the most, you know, innovative learning spaces academia in the research library world.
Well, you know, I've got about 30 seconds left for this question, but again, digital age, why space? Why make the space look so great and attract people?
Well, exhibits, whether they're digital or physical, which I work in both media, allow an institution to make public their holdings or their specialty or things that they think will be interesting to their users. And I've, you know, in a way, exhibit design isn't that different from book design. It's the way that the user or the visitor experiences it. And, you know, you're not turning pages, you are physically moving through a space and you are moving through the arc of a narrative. Obviously, you know, it's a metaphor that has some rough edges to it, but I like to think of it as a 3D way of taking work off the printed page and into the environment.
Molly, what a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Molly Renda, exhibit program designer at North Carolina State University Libraries and a book designer. And that is our program for today. Thank you for listening. Our website is stateofthings.org. And this is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.